My name is Jackie Lamport. Today is Monday, September 13th. Welcome to the Capital Daily Podcast. Today on the show, we bring you the third installment of our election coverage. Today, we put your questions to the candidates of Esquimalt, Saanich, Souk. If you want to help support the Capital Daily Podcast, the best thing you can do right now is to rate and review on the app that you're listening to, and also maybe check out our membership opportunity at capitaldaily.ca/member. Today's podcast is brought to you by Fatso Nut Butters. Fatso can be found in stores right across Victoria, including Whole Foods Market, The Root Cellar, Thrifty Foods, Save-On Foods, Red Barn, Lifestyles, Peppers, and many more. Check out their new classic almond and seed butter flavor and go to eatfatso.com to find a store near you. Today we continue our election coverage where we put your questions to the local candidates. In this episode, we focus on the Esquimalt, Saanich, Souk riding. Our past two episodes have covered the Victoria and Saanich Gulf Islands ridings. In the final installment, we will also bring you candidates from Cowichan, Malahat, Langford. Today we have four questions from you to put to the four major candidates in the Esquimalt, Saanich, Souk riding. And again, for the format, I will ask a question and then play the answers from all of the candidates back to back, then move on to the next question. The first question comes from David. He says, what will you do to increase the supply of housing while minimizing the environmental impact of urban sprawl? We are seeing mountainsides being blasted off because of restrictions on housing in our core municipalities. What will you do to impact and guide these municipalities to change policies, allowing more housing for young people and families who cannot find housing because of limited supply? We'll start with NDP incumbent Randall Garrison.
So what we've been advocating for is to increase the supply of housing at the low end of the market or the non-market housing. And as everybody knows, the private market will build high-end housing till the cows come home, but it will not build affordable housing for families. And so there's a couple of ways we could do that. One is to use CMHC and federal funding simply to build 250,000 units of affordable family housing. Nonprofit and cooperatives is the way we prefer to go because that provides secure housing for families that can't be monetized, can't be used to speculate, and it provides a safe place and builds community. So 250,000 over the next 5 years, financed through CMHC. That's the best and quickest way that we can get something started that will take care of those people who the market is never going to serve. The second thing we've said is that we can provide incentives to developers to build more rental housing. So for purpose-built, dedicated rental housing that's affordable, we would take the GST off the construction costs. And that provides a major incentive to developers. And when you talk to them, they say, yes, actually, that would make us consider building more rental housing. So those are the two biggest things we can do. In terms of where the housing is placed, the density of housing, and all of those kinds of things, the fact that we're talking about cooperatives and we're talking about nonprofit housing means that we're not talking about single family houses on sprawling lots. We're talking about building communities that are much denser. We're talking about building communities that are walkable, and we're talking about building communities near transit hubs. And so while the cities have the ultimate control over land use, certainly by favoring cooperatives, again, and nonprofits, high density townhouses, some condos, then we think that that's going to promote more environmentally responsible housing as well as affordable housing.
Now, Liberal candidate Doug Kobayashi.
Well, first of all, I strongly believe that governments at all levels have a major role and responsibility in this. It's basically owning a house is how people secure their future retirement. So myself personally, I am extremely concerned about housing affordability right now. And I'll just give you my own daughter's experience right now. She just recently obtained a job here 3 months ago working downtown as an engineer. And she saved up quite a bit of money for a down payment. But the cost of housing is just, and she went through the whole bidding war. And she bid on three different houses and couldn't get into them because they end up selling for 20, 30, and 40,000 more than what they were listed for. So I don't know if this is true, but you know, I read articles that over the past year, the average price of homes have increased about 22%. And some of that is also driven by material shortages and soaring construction costs right now. They've certainly added fuel to the fire. They say that right now that about 85% of Canadians right now get their housing through the private market, which continues to both inflate and distort and make it almost impossible for new buyers. However, there is a fine balance that must be maintained. It's just not, I know the one solution that all parties have suggested right now, it's greater supply. But that's part of the solution right now. And why I'm saying this is because what everyone's forgetting is that you just can't, being a local municipal official, it's not that simple, because basically you need the land, and the land is all over the place right now. And in order to increase the supply, you have to unfortunately densify. And basically, you want to densify near main streets and just leave the single-family homes alone. You're trying to intensify around, you know, basically transit right now. So, you know, I believe myself the solution is to give cities more power to deal with it, with the feds as a funding partner. So, you know, that's one big aspect of this right now. Like I said, it's just not a binary supply and demand issue. It's a combination of a lot of things. For example, right now the Liberal Party wants to put into a place a policy that takes action against speculators right now. That's causing a big problem right now within our market. It's artificially inflating homes. I think that the Liberal policy of allowing a home ownership investment program for, they're allowed to save up to about $40,000, and that's tax free in, tax free out. And the last part of the solution to this is protecting the rights of buyers right now, and again that has to do with. You know, taking no more blind bidding on homes. I think that's another thing that's causing a lot of the problems. It's actually a very complex problem, though. And what it requires right now is leadership. And if I was the candidate if I was the MP for this riding, I would absolutely take a big part in this leadership role in getting both the provincial and the local governments involved in coming up with solutions to this problem. It is probably the biggest thing that's causing affordability. It's the biggest part of the affordability issue here in Southern Vancouver Island.
Next, we hear from Conservative candidate Laura Frost. And again, the question was about increasing housing supply while minimizing the environmental impacts of development.
I think the way that was worded was excellent, actually, because we do want, we need, desperately need the housing, and we need to target specific community groups such as seniors and the disabled and low income. But at the same time, we are seeing the loss of a lot of vegetation and kind of areas that we weren't expecting it. So the Conservative Party of Canada, one of their key platforms is that they will release federal lands for housing. So we have a few areas in Souk. We have Rocky Point. We have Mary Hill in Machosin. Most importantly, because we have quite a large area, in Belmont Park in Colmwood. And we also have Work Point in Esquimalt. So for particularly that Colmwood area, it is a large area. And I think that any release would have to be done, you know, really mindful of, is this for seniors? Is this for disability? Is this for, you know, who? And who is it for? Another particular topic of interest, I think, is the limiting of foreign ownership of like single family homes and that type of thing in this area, because we're trying to get the market to stabilize, right? It's just incredibly high. It's $1 million for just an average house. So yeah, that's something the Conservative Party is really looking at as well.
And finally, Green Party candidate Harley Gordon.
Yeah, that's a great question, David. And that's an incredibly serious concern in Canada and in Southern Vancouver Island in particular. Right? You have a lot of university students just starting and they're unable to find housing. The cost of a single bedroom apartment in Victoria is $1,700. It's out of reach for so many. And I think you framed the question really, really well, because you said guiding municipalities. And that's a good way to take it, because as the federal government, you can't overrule zoning laws. You can't tell the municipalities where and when they can build houses, but you can guide them through federal incentives. One of the federal incentives that we really do want to offer, because we need to increase supply, is offering transit investments, things like rail, things like bus lanes, these public transit funding, and then incentivizing that funding with a requirement or essentially a bonus or a benefit if municipalities are willing to rezone areas next to transit infrastructure to increase density within the housing. So, you know, cities are where people live, and containing this urban sprawl by adding density is really, really important. I absolutely agree that's what needs to happen. And we do that by promoting density within the city and providing public transit funding, allowing our cities to be more walkable, to require less cars, and make sure that they are more environmentally sustainable.
The next question we have is, as wages continue to stay stagnant and housing continues to rise in cost and tuition goes up nearly every year, it's creating an increasingly difficult hurdle for young people to get a start in life. Student loans play a large role in the unaffordability of a young person's life. What are your thoughts on making life more financially attainable for Canada's student population? This time we'll start with Liberal candidate Doug Kobayashi.
Another great question. I think the Liberal policy right now I think they put a hold on the interest on the loans right now for students. And I think that they want to continue this if elected. That's part of their policy platform. I totally agree with this right now. This is, like I said before, it's the whole market right now is just being absolutely inflated right now, and we almost need like a control on that. We need a regulation to maybe regulate housing prices right now. So it is a big issue right now, and I would absolutely fight for, and I would really want us to understand all the issues around it to come up with the resolution. Again, this is going to take all levels of government to be involved in this.
Now, Green Party candidate Harley Gordon.
Now, this is a great question, and it's incredibly important, and it's personal to myself. You know, I'm in my last year of my PhD, my doctorate, in forest biology. I am a student. I know the challenges that students face because I face them myself. I face the challenges of finding a place to live, of making enough, of paying tuition, supporting my family. This is something that I face on the daily, and it's incredibly important. So the Green Party has a lot of solutions, because we recognize the severity of this problem when it comes to our education system, when it comes to young people in this country, when it comes to our democracy. Part of that is implementing programs like the Guaranteed Livable Income, which has a minimum amount of money that everyone will be provided up until a certain point, until they start making more money, to allow everyone to live with dignity. The Green Party has a lot of options, or a lot of plans to help address the crisis that students are facing. One of them is implementation of a guaranteed livable income. You know, really strengthening our social safety net to make sure it includes everyone, including students. The Green Party also has a stand to support universal tuition. Right now, it is the young people in our country that get burdened with the debt and the cost of an education that's a requirement for so many jobs. We need to offer universal tuition for our students. And we need to forgive student debt, because it is a growing burden on far too many people. This is how the Green Party can directly help students. It's incredibly important that we do this, and we need to do it sooner rather than later.
and NDP incumbent Randall Garrison. Again, the question was, what are your thoughts on making life more financially attainable for Canada's student population?
Well, we've said right now that the first thing we would do is to cancel up to $20,000 of individual student debt. So we can't have people trying to start off in life, trying to start a family, trying to start a job, trying to get secure housing, if they're bearing this huge burden of student loans. So that's the first place to start, is a quick, sharp reduction in that debt. We also don't believe that the federal government should be collecting interest on student loans. No need for the federal government to profit. And I know some people have argued, well, that's not really profit. Well, I'm sorry. If you're collecting the money and it's more than people paid, that's a profit. I don't care what you tell me that you're actually doing with it. We want to take that piece out of the student loan program. So obviously more grants, reduction of the debt, that will help students get a better start. Now, we've also talked about a couple things that have to happen in the labor market for those people who are just getting started. And one of those is a livable wage. And that's something that I've been an advocate for since I served on the Esquimalt Council nearly a decade ago. And we started at $15 an hour then. That's no longer enough. We've reached $15 an hour, and that's not livable. So we're talking about at least a $20 an hour minimum wage, which is indexed. And the second piece is we need a change to both federal and provincial labor standards so that part-time and temporary workers in the so-called gig economy, have the same rights in terms of protections at work and the same access to benefits like a pension plan, like employment insurance that other workers have. And we all know the ruse that's going on now where companies try to pretend that the people working for them aren't employees and transfer the costs off to them as individuals. And so we just need to change the federal labor code, and we'd also hope to see a change in the provincial code to make that impossible for employers to do.
Finishing this time with Conservative candidate Laura Frost.
Wow. Something I've lived. I don't think we have a platform position on that specifically right now. But I mean, I think in our heart, we want everyone to get the education they need. We want people to be moving through the education system. We don't want them stopping or having to fall out of it for periods of work and stuff like that. But at the same time, we don't want them burdened with years and years of debt. So I personally would like to see more grants. I'd like to see more grant programs and ways for people to pay off student loans faster. I mean, we do incur debt. We have to be financially, fiscally responsible. But at the same time, this is our chance to get our kids educated and to get ahead. And we need their brains, I mean, in technology and forward. So yeah, let's support Canadians. We have to, and let's help them pay their system off faster.
We'll take a quick break here for a word from our sponsor. Today's podcast is brought to you by Arise Developments and their exclusive hard hat tours at Rotunda in James Bay. Register for a private hard hat tour of Rotunda's homes in progress built by the team at Arise. With only 2 homes remaining and move-in scheduled for early 2022, you don't want to miss this sneak preview opportunity. Check out arise.ca/rotunda. That's ARYZE.ca/rotunda, ROTUNDA. The next question says, what are your priorities for tackling climate change locally? To start, here's Green Party candidate Harley Gordon.
Another great question. You know, the Green Party really has the most comprehensive plan when it comes to tackling climate change. Step one is declaring this climate emergency. But these are very large scale, nationwide objectives. Locally, there's a few things we can do. And there's an issue that I'm really, really passionate about. And part of it is actually protecting our old growth forests, which I believe the federal government can take a much stronger role in doing. So tackling climate change locally, when we look at that, is protecting some of these endangered ecosystems that are at risk of being logged and start releasing carbon. When I talk about protecting old growth forests, because this is something that is pertinent to Southern Vancouver Island and the riding of Esquimalt Saanich Sioux, I talk about strengthening the Species at Risk Act to include endangered ecosystems. Ecosystems like these old growth forests that are 1200 years old and have stored 1200 years of carbon in the soil. When they get clear cut, a lot of that carbon is released, and a lot of those emissions go towards just greenhouse gas emissions in Canada in general. So protecting some of our some of our ancient forests and ancient ecosystems and preventing them from releasing a lot of the stored carbon if they are harvested, that would be something that I would tackle locally. And that's something that I think we really need to be paying more attention to.
And now Conservative candidates, Laura Frost.
It's really, really important question. So two areas that would be my focus are, number one, dealing with the reservoir problem. So we need to double it. Now, fortunately, the Conservative Party of Canada has said, look, we are putting money into infrastructure. We're not going to just talk about it and forget about it when we get into office. We are putting the money into shovel-ready projects. And so that's what I would put forward. Doubling of the reservoir because we need the water. And the other project, it's pretty close to my heart, is we had this terrible heat wave and 570 people died. You know, it wasn't necessary. It's about us adapting to climate change. And so one of the things we put in our house was a heat pump. And honestly, we didn't do it for air conditioning. But when that heat wave came, my husband's father and mother were over and they were sheltering there. So if we can maybe get rebate programs in to increase the number of heat pumps, maybe even in community centers and in houses, then you have more opportunity for sheltering within. So that's sort of like a macro and a micro approach.
Moving on to Liberal candidate Doug Kobayashi. As a reminder, the question was, what are your priorities for tackling climate change locally?
Great one. This is my top priority, and I was one that was trying to decide, in all my reading, what was really causing climate change. And I after a lot of research into the subject, I knew this was, I came to my own reckoning in saying that we are the cause of it right now. And if you just look at the, I read the Canadian Institute of Climate Choices, and they were talking about the number and costs of catastrophic weather events over the past decade alone. You know, it's flooding across the prairies and southern Ontario to the wildfires in BC and Alberta to the severe weather damage on Canadian farms. They were twice as high as those recorded in the previous decades together. And I believe that taking climate action now is a critical economic opportunity that will maintain and create Canadian jobs and make our economy more resilient and more competitive. This is what all our trading partners across the world are doing right now. And I think that we are well positioned to be a leader in this area. We've got clean technology companies right now that receive a lot of international recognition for their innovations right now. We are one of the world leaders in creating electric transit buses, carbon-free aluminum, for example. And I think the big thing that really got me onto the Liberal platform is everyone should read this, because there's a lot of information in this right now. And this is the Liberal climate change plan. It's entitled A Healthy Environment and a Healthy Economy. And it is a good plan to build a better future with a healthier economy and environment. And there's five pillars to this plan. And one of them is cutting energy waste, making homes more energy efficient right now and buildings. The second part of it is making clean and affordable transportation and power available in every community. The third part of it is putting a cost to carbon pollution right now. The Conservatives don't believe in this and want to put us back a decade. I think this is a good thing that there has to be a price on creating carbon pollution.
And lastly, NDP incumbent Randall Garrison.
Well, I have to take a little bit of exception with that. You can't tackle climate change locally because emissions anywhere are emissions everywhere. So we've got to do the big things that we need to do. Obviously, some of that will result in projects locally. But I'm one of those who's become very weary of talking about targets we never meet. And now what I'd like to talk about is actions we can actually take. And so I introduced a motion in the last parliament called Motion M50. And my motion says, let's immediately take all the subsidies away from the fossil fuel industries and take those funds that we're expending and give them to a new Crown Corporation called Renewable Canada. And the mandate of that Crown Corporation would be to start building renewable energy project in communities across the country. We have an enormous potential in renewable energy. It's cheaper than producing energy from fossil fuels. And of course it has all the environmental impacts that are obvious. But right now, we spend a lot of time talking and not much time doing. And so I'd like to see that get started. And I've also said, you know, we can't expect workers to pay the price of this transition with their jobs and ultimately their housing. And so in my motion, it actually says, let's start those projects first in northern BC, Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Newfoundland, where families who have been working in the energy industry are at greatest risk of losing jobs as a result of this necessary transition. And I actually commissioned a study through my office at the House of Commons, looking at skill transfers from the oil and gas industry into the new renewable energy industries. And what we found in that study was that the skills are almost universally transferable. It doesn't take a lot of retraining or re-education to take people who worked in the oil industry as welders and pipe fitters and all those kinds of things, because you need those same things in renewable energy. So I'd like to see us get started now. And that would, of course, result in projects locally. The other thing I'll say that we do need to do locally is some climate mitigation. And let me just mention briefly two things that we really have to get started on now. I've been working on better protections for southern resident killer whales because the obvious extinction is forever and we're very close to losing them. And wild salmon runs and getting fish farms out of the water. Because of the threat they present to wild salmon. So that's just two things in terms of taking care of those immediate crises locally that are being caused by climate change.
The final question is from our podcast team. We asked, Ferry Creek is a local issue attracting national attention. It's complex in that it's an overwhelming outcry against old growth logging, but the issue is also delicately balancing Indigenous rights and sovereignty. How would you balance these two issues federally in similar situations? We'll start with Conservative candidate Laura Frost.
Wow. You guys have got some thinking going on there behind the scenes. Okay, so Ferry Creek is a provincial issue. So let's take it into more federal sense. How will we deal with this contest? Well, we have to have old growth management strategies. We just have to have them. And they're sort of, I know in BC, they're working on it. It's too long to have been working on it. You know, it's just an incredibly important resource to us in the province. And I am a forester. I do have that kind of background. But at the same time, we have to say you can't replace some stands. You just cannot. First Nations, you know, different bands have different positions on different situations. So we can't say across the board. What we as Conservatives do, we promise to listen. We promise to listen to what First Nations are saying, where they want to move in partnership, where they want to focus in environment, where they want to need the movement in jobs, and balance and weigh those things. We're not looking for a stamp, one kind of solution. It's more kind of the path forward and partnership. But it all begins with us listening first. And let's face it, we're in a season of healing, and that might be the focus first.
And NDP incumbent, Randall Garrison.
So I have long worked with Indigenous people on protecting title and rights. And there's no doubt in my mind that what has to take precedence at Ferry Creek is the right of the Pachidut First Nation to decide how they want to steward their own land. And both the elected and the hereditary chief have asked the protests to stand down at Ferry Creek to give them the time they need as a community to develop their stewardship plan. So the federal role there for me is two things. One, it's to provide a fund to assist First Nations in building those stewardship plans. Apache is a small nation. They don't have a whole raft of professional foresters on staff. They need the financial support to do that stewardship plan. The second thing is there needs to be an accompanying fund that will compensate First Nations who preserve old growth forest. Because we can't go to First Nations and say, we left you this tiny scrap of land from all that you used to have, and now we're going to tell you you can't do anything with it to build economic development for your community. I believe if that compensation fund is available, there's no doubt that First Nations have the same interest that we all do in preserving old growth forests.
Again, the question is how the candidates believes we should balance environmental issues and Indigenous issues on a federal scale in similar situations to Fairy Creek. Here's Green Party candidate Harley Gordon's answer.
You know, that is a great point to bring up. Protecting Fairy Creek, old growth logging, it is an international outcry, and it's something that a lot of people are very vocal about. But there's a lot of conflict with the federal government or any of the governments stepping in and making unilateral decisions on the traditional territories of First Nations, in this case, the Pechidat and the Ditdat people. And I want to point to an example of something that was successful when it came to protecting a lot of forests, and that's the Great Bear Rainforest. And they were able to protect, I think, 75% of the forest there, while allowing 25% for active logging and resource extraction. They were able to do that through collaboration with, I believe, 40 different First Nations. And the federal government had a substantial role in that they provided something called conservation financing. So part of the issue that we're really seeing provincially is the provincial government enters these resource sharing agreements with First Nations, but when they go to the negotiating table, the options are extract the resources and get a small portion of the revenue, or don't extract the resources and get nothing. What the federal government can do is provide money for something called conservation financing, which provides maybe a third option during these resource sharing agreement negotiations, where the federal government provides dollars for things like ecotourism infrastructure, for building things like lodges, building things like campgrounds, things that actually rely on protected forested areas to encourage ecotourism, fishing, to encourage the inflow of dollars in a sustainable way. And that is absolutely something the federal government needs to take a more active role in. And that's part of the balancing, right? The Green Party wants to implement the UN Declaration, or meaningfully implement the UN Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People. Part of that is during agreements with the 600 plus First Nations in Canada, means free, prior, and informed consent. And it means when you go to the negotiating table, there is not a yes or a no. There are many options available, and this is something that we need to work on as a nation.
And Liberal candidate Doug Kobayashi.
I believe the federal government does have a role in this right now. And the problem is that we've got to get all the players around the table. And as far as I know, funding has been made available by the federal government, I think in the order of about $50 million. And we haven't had that discussion. We haven't had the people that are protesting it around the table. We haven't had the loggers, because they're important in this, the First Nations, nor the government people. We have not had this. And to really understand, this is a very complex issue, actually, because there are so many elements to it. You know, the climate change issue right now, you know, just talking about, preserving lands. So it is a very complex situation. But, you know, the one thing that how I look at this right now, the stewardship of that forest, you know, is, to me, in my opinion, is First Nations. And, you know, I think their plan right now is, I think there was a 2-year moratorium that was put on this right now, I believe, that was approved by the provincial government. I would love to see what they're thinking about this right now, and they want to come up with their plan. And I'd be very interested in seeing that. So I think the issue is what we have to, instead of what's happening right now, I think it requires all the parties to come together. And I think the federal government could play a major leadership role in this issue.
And And that wraps the third episode in our election coverage. Stay tuned for our final episode where we speak to the candidates of Cowichan, Malahat, Langford. And if you haven't already, you can also go back and hear our Victoria and Saanich Gulf Islands episodes. You can also read our riding profiles with our own questions for the candidates in our web copy at capitaldaily.ca. And if you want to help support Capital Daily's local journalism and connect your business with our engaged and curious Greater Victoria audience of over 50,000, you can email our partnerships team at advertising@capitaldaily.ca. Thanks so much for spending your day with us. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave a rating and a review and also subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes going forward. We post new shows every Monday to Friday. My name is Jackie Lamports. This is the Capital Daily Podcast. We'll talk to you tomorrow.